Hey everybody, this is Walt.
This is Max.
And you are listening to Dystopian Cinema Reviews.
We are, as always, Useless Info, Inc., and welcome to our survey of dystopian cinema. And today we have a special guest. Welcome to Steve.
Hello.
Awesome, Steve. Great having you with us. So today we are doing Planet of the Apes, the
Planet
original,
of
course,
Apes.
Because there is only one, right? 1968, directed by Franklin J. Schaffner? What else did he direct, Steve?
He directed, well, he won the Academy Award for Best Director for Patton.
Patton.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Papillon.
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 Yeah. And
yeah, you got to say with
Boys from Brazil.
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting mix of films, actually.
And he was Heston's suggestion to direct the film because they worked together on Warlord, on The Warlord.
And The Warlord was about, which one was that? Was that a... The one about... That wasn't the El Cid one, right? That was called
no,
El Cid.
That
Warlord,
was El Cid.
There was one where he was Genghis Khan.
That's crazy.
Which, I mean, try to imagine that, but...
I'm Genghis Khan.
He played Moses, so...
Right. Let my people go.
All right, so let's get into
this.
I'm
just going to do the rest of the podcast as Charlton Heston.
I think you should. So first thing I want to talk about is Taylor. Taylor is Cheston, of course.
Cheston. Chesty Heston.
His monologue when he's in outer space, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They've been 6 months in deep space, right?
Right.
But the Earth time is 2673. They left in the 20th century, but it's already been several centuries Earth time.
Right.
So he's got this monologue where he's wondering if people are still killing each other, right?
Right.
He's
wondering letting their children starve, their neighbors' children starve, he says.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like he's still focused on what's going on back on Earth. And I love this line. Space squashes a man's ego.
Not his.
I feel lonely.
Yeah. Right.
So what do we make of that? What is it setting us up for?
Well, it's setting us up for Taylor's character.
Okay.
Because that's what the movie is about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
It's about him.
It's his journey.
And he's letting us know who he is. They're also letting us know that this guy loves to talk.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got the hugest ego running.
Heston loves to talk, and Rod Serling loves to write.
Yeah.
We know that much, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we should just mention Rod Serling wrote the original script. But then they brought in Michael Wilson. Is that what you have, Steve?
Yep, Michael Wilson.
So he did a lot of, he did some rewrites. I think there's about five scripts or something. There's a number online. And then they brought in a third guy to do some final polishing. Is that what you have, Steve?
That I don't have.
Okay, well...
There were a number of rewrites, though.
Yeah, we'll get into that. It was Serling who came up with the original, with the now kind of iconic ending. Well, he finds out he's back on Earth.
Right, if you haven't seen it at this point,
stop listening. Yeah, just go and see it. But originally, he didn't find the Statue of Liberty. He found, like, a training film, like a U.S. Air Force training, or something like that. It was a little bit different.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We'll get into that a little more. So the spaceship crashes, right? Actually, one thing I love about the way they depict the crash is it's filmed from the point of view of the spaceship. So you just kind of see the Earth rushing up at you, right? Which kind of saved money.
Circling and spiraling.
You don't have to like actually build a model spaceship.
Right, exactly.
They did the same thing in Empire Strikes Back.
Which scene was this?
When Luke crashes on Dagobah. You see the cockpit and you see these vines and things thrown at the cockpit.
We always go back to fucking Star Wars.
Well, it's a touchstone. Right. And of course Luke is barred from everything in existence.
right.
So, yeah.
And the ship is pretty sweet looking.
It's a cool ship.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Kind of triangular like diamond
design.
So the last thing we see is the year is now 3978.
That's right.
And I think it's been another year they've been in cryogenic suspension. It's another year has gone by.
Right.
So they get on shore and...
Well, first they lose a crew member.
Right.
Because her cryogenic chamber...
Stewart.
Cracked, right.
Yeah. The only woman among the crew.
And we're going to get into that.
Later on, we have to get into that, yeah. Now, so we've got Taylor, Landon, and Dodge, right?
Right.
Now, Landon plants an American flag.
Right.
Taylor bursts out laughing.
Steve, with his big teeth.
Talk about the context of that.
Well, Taylor prides himself on being a cynic and a misanthrope.
He's a self-conscious misanthrope.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe in the ability of the human race to sustain itself and forget politics or the American way.
Yeah. Right.
So he's mocking his fellow soldier.
You know, and exactly. Yeah.
And he's just glad as hell to be away from all of it.
Mm-hmm. He digs into the two of them when they're walking across the Forbidden Zone.
We'll get to that in a moment.
Okay.
But back to the flag. This came out in 1968. Moon landing was when? 69. When we actually did plant a flag in another world. And here you've got this movie undercutting that immediately, right?
Right.
I mean, talk about the context a little bit, Steve. I mean, this is the 60s. There's a certain sensibility going on here.
There is a certain sensibility, but I don't think we should forget the fact that, you know, they're just trying to make an action film.
Sure.
Science fiction. Something that's really going to sell, especially with the kids. But they know that you've got Vietnam going on.
Yep.
Right.
And you've got all this money going into NASA,
which is basically
rallying around the flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've also got the terror of a nuclear holocaust going mm-hmm. on.
Right.
You've got Rod Serling,
who is
a noted Hollywood liberal, and who also, whose track record you could see in The Twilight Zone
Absolutely.
For his own political convictions. And then you've got the other screenwriter, Michael Wilson, who was a blacklisted
screenwriter.
Yeah.
So there is a built-in critique
mm-hmm.
of the United States. And so also, not to mention the civil rights movement, 1968, this is like right before Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Right, exactly,
so,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the Watts riots had already happened.
This
is built in. It's leading to Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Well, also, Wilson was, they went after him for being a suspected communist, right?
Yeah.
The witch hunts in the 50s.
He got blacklisted. Now, he worked on Bridge of the River Kwai, right?
Yeah.
Which was based on a novel.
By the same guy, Pierre Boulle.
Who wrote Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you say it in French? Is it?
Yeah.
No, how do you say the title of the novel
oh,
in French?
Oh,
you got the better French accent.
La Planète des Songes.
There you go. That's sexy.
Sexy. It's early Walt.
And he was also an uncredited writer on Lawrence of Arabia.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay.
Which also takes a pretty jaundiced view of politics as well.
Exactly. And militarism. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of built into it.
It's all woven into this screenplay. You know, when you're a kid, you just think like, okay, it's a cool movie about apes and you know, humans, whatever. But
right, an ape planet.
Yeah,
science fiction.
Yeah. When you dig into it, there's some interesting things going on.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get back into it. So I want to talk about what you're mentioning, Walt. There's a moment when the three of them are kind of talking, they're trying to survive, and we kind of get a profile of their various characters, right?
Sure.
Now, Taylor mocks Landon.
Right.
And he kind of sets up Landon to be sort of a stereotypical overachiever.
Yeah.
You know, straight A student.
All American.
Exactly. Yeah. Like what you would think of as an astronaut, right?
All American with a mohawk haircut.
Yeah.
A bowl haircut.
Yeah. And
he even makes fun of his beard. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut
you. Yeah.
He's like, you've gone gray. Not me, you. You know? Meanwhile, he's probably 10 years older than him, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Now, Dodge seems pretty simple. He's a scientist.
Yeah.
He's inquisitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Taylor, he's a little bit different. He says he's looking for something in the universe better than man.
Than man, right.
Yes. What are we thinking about Taylor, his character at this point?
Well, I think like Steve was saying, he's fine with letting the whole world burn. He's fine with it.
He thinks he is.
Right. Until he realizes.
Exactly.
He thinks he is.
Right.
He actually, he doesn't even, he's not even aware of how much he hopes that there is some evolution or some intelligence or decency. He's not as cynical as he thinks he is.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll find that out.
There's an idealism there, right?
It is very deep down.
Obviously, he's set up as the most interesting character, which is why he's our protagonist.
He's also kind of a jerk, but in the beginning.
Yeah.
He has an arc.
Yeah, we got it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. The other two are pretty simple, which is why we don't mind losing them in the first act.
Right.
Yeah.
Normally, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
You make those characters jerks, so when they die off, you don't care.
Yeah, exactly. But no, they seem decent guys.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
They were in it to win it.
Yeah. All right. So then we actually see humans watching them before they do.
Right.
So we're
and they steal their clothes when they go
steal
skinny
their clothes.
Dipping.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then there's that weird scene, though. You know the scene I'm talking about, right?
Which one?
Where they find out that their spacesuits have been stolen.
Yeah.
And the two guys go down basically on fucking Taylor. There's a scene where it looks like they're going down on him.
Okay.
And he's standing there.
I don't think
they're all like,
I didn't
they
see
look
that.
Like they're going to circle jerk. And then they both go down, and he's kind of looking down like, all right.
You might be seeing something we didn't notice, Walt.
Oh, fuck. I'm out here all alone. I'm on a limb, so to speak. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Their spacesuits get stolen while they're skinny dipping. Yeah.
And then when they see the humans, Taylor says, in 6 months, we'll be running this planet.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Might as well have a big flashing sign saying irony
above him. Oh, the other thing, too, they find the plant in the desert, the first sign of life, and basically they kill it by digging it up, and they take it with them.
Okay, yeah. So that happens, yeah.
You'd start digging for water, wouldn't you?
You would, yeah. Right? I think so, yeah.
Anyway,
it's
just
all,
me.
It's all poison out there, right? Doesn't one of them say it's all, like, nothing's going to grow? And they're talking about
it is
water.
A forbidden zone,
that,
but...
That is, you know, it's a myth to keep, you know...
The apes from going
to
certain...
Right. From, you know, to keep them within...
Certain boundaries of their civilization.
Wasn't he kind of scanning at one point? Well, not scanning, but somehow testing the soil?
Well, something went awry because the scientist, Dodge, he's noticing strange weather.
Right, exactly.
And it's like, so it's
those
not,
weird storms,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and that's why they don't see the moon at night, right?
Right.
Because it's always cloudy at night.
Yeah.
That's how they explain that bit.
But also, when they're walking through the Forbidden Zone, they're... deliberately echoing, you know, Western movies where you've got the American soldiers being tracked by Native Americans in the cliffs.
Right.
You know, so they're tying the movie into Westerns for sure.
Hmm.
They were supposed to film in Texas, but they chose not to specifically because of that fact.
Hmm.
They didn't want it to be confused with the American Western.
What?
It was in Arizona where they filmed.
Was that where it was? Do we know?
I don't know.
Yeah, it was in Arizona.
Okay.
Those scenes, anyway. A lot of it were on the Fox lots.
Sure, yeah.
You know,
the back lots.
That,
yeah.
But yeah, those scenes were filmed in Arizona, and the heat was so brutal, cast and crew, they were passing out.
Well,
right.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But not Charlton Heston, though.
Of course not.
He was just getting a nice tan.
Of course. Okay, so then the apes attack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They round up the humans in the field, in the cornfield.
Yeah, I want to talk about the first time we actually see an ape.
Right, and that great soundtrack.
Jerry Goldsmith.
Yep.
Right?
We also did Logan's Run, which we reviewed.
Yeah, this was an innovative soundtrack at the time.
Yeah, it was avant-garde, so to speak.
Yeah, like it's got bits that sound like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring and like other sort of modernist stuff.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, right?
He used all kinds of crazy horns and pots and pans and stuff and all.
And it sounds like there's some electronic effects in there as well.
Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, he's kind of like going for also a kind of a primitive sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with that for sure. Yeah, he did Logan's Run, he did Patton, Chinatown, The Omen, Outland, Poltergeist, Alien, Basic Instinct.
Thought of the guy that you get when you can't get John Williams.
Right.
But he's a really interesting, innovative composer.
Yeah,
he's
done
the Omen.
A lot of movies. Yeah, he did The Omen. Three Rambo movies.
He did what we now know of as a Star Trek theme.
Chinatown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was a great soundtrack, too.
Right.
Yeah. One thing I'm wondering, and I couldn't find the answer to this, but when people saw this movie in 1968, did they know what the apes looked like? Was that revealed in trailers? Did you know it, Steve?
I'm pretty sure they did. I think if you look at the original posters, you will see like the face of one of the
gorillas.
Of the apes.
It shows them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if I've seen the trailer, but you know that is the selling point for the audience.
Yeah.
Is the apes and just the incredible makeup work.
You know?
But certainly that first scene where you've got the ape on the horse.
The big reveal.
Yeah.
You know, moving through, which I guess is a cornfield, you know, because those are crops that they're walking through.
Yeah.
It's one of the iconic shots in that movie for sure.
Absolutely.
You know?
And you've got the ape looming above Charlton Heston. He's the vulnerable one. The ape is in this dominant position.
Now he starts to switch his character.
And it just sells it. I'm wondering if, let's say the first time we saw the apes, it was like Zira and Dr. Galen having a conversation about some scientific matter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if people would have started laughing, if that would have sold the movie as much as this shot is gorilla.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think so.
I think it was deliberate to start out with something like that.
Because they look warlike, too. I mean, they're on horseback.
They got rifles.
The
pacing of the film, I mean, they wait a long time.
It's a half hour.
There is a lot of footage of these three astronauts trekking through what is, you know, a desert. You know?
Yeah, like I said, it's about 30 minutes.
It's like 30 minutes,
And they're building up tension.
Yeah.
And you're just waiting. you mm-hmm. know, for the apes yeah. to appear.
And maybe that was one of the first times they did that in a science fiction film with the creature makeup.
Okay, what you do you know? Mean?
Long wait for the reveal. The long wait for that reveal.
Hmm.
I can't remember one before.
I think that's pretty common, like, well, this is more horror, but like the Thing mm-hmm. from Another World.
From Another World.
True,
like,
yeah.
Like 51, like, you barely see it. They, you know, because they just didn't have the budget for
right,
it.
Right,
yeah.
Oh, that's
think,
right. You
I
know,
think
yeah.
that was a common thing to, like, we'll just, like, when do they show huh. King Kong? And,
yeah.
you know, it's like
yeah,
they
good point.
Wait probably 45 minutes in that film to
True.
Show King Kong. But what's amazing about this is they wait, and then when you see these guys on these horses and you see their facial expressions, it's really powerful because it's just so good. You
yeah.
know, it really
right.
stands up
right.
to this day.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's why the producer wanted to make this movie. He was a fan of King Kong. Now I remember that.
Hmm.
He was a big fan of King Kong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
So
yeah.
I guess maybe that plays into it with the long wait for that reveal of the gorilla on the horse, you know.
The makeup effects are incredible.
Oh, yeah, they were state of the... I mean, they changed the art
yeah,
of
yeah,
makeup
yeah,
effects
yeah.
at the time.
Do we know who did the makeup?
John Chambers.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do we know what else he did? Do we have anything?
Well, he did the Munsters.
Did he?
I love the Munsters.
He did makeup on the Munsters, the Outer Limits, Spock's ears.
Ah,
but it's really
okay.
What's interesting is his background.
Right,
is
yeah.
He did prosthetics
yeah.
for wounded veterans after World War II.
That's right.
He was
really?
Reconstructing...
Noses and chins, and,
huh. And he started out as a jewelry designer. So this guy is a real craftsman.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow.
But you know, then he was ultimately played by John Goodman in Argo.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he also worked for the CIA.
That I didn't know.
Yeah, he's
wow.
he's a fascinating guy, but obviously pretty talented. A lot of talented people worked on this movie, which actually didn't even have a big budget.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing.
The original makeup was Ben Nighy. He did test makeup. He worked on
was
The Fly, Valley of the Dolls.
Okay.
But his initial designs were scrapped.
Oh.
I can't remember who it was. But,
was it Roddy McDowall?
No. I do know James Brolin was one of the test makeup guys.
Right,
Charlton
right.
Heston. Another really famous actor.
Wasn't somebody else slated to play Dr. Zaius?
Yes.
But who?
It was Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson, thank you. Yeah, yeah.
He was getting up there, and it was too difficult to
yeah.
like go through the grueling process of
right.
getting the makeup
yeah,
applied
yeah.
and to be in the makeup. It was too much for him.
But if
yeah.
you look at the behind the scenes, there are images of him in the makeup and the whole thing and doing film tests with Charlton Heston.
Wow.
And the makeup was a lot more stripped down.
Okay.
It was
initially,
a lot more stripped down, yeah.
Yeah.
What Nighy was doing.
Yeah. No, it looks so, it's so detailed. It looks so good.
Yeah.
So,
back on target. Back on
yes,
target.
Yes. So we see Ape City. Ape City's pretty cool looking.
Yeah. They made cool toy play sets. Remember in the 70s?
Yeah, I remember those.
The Mego play sets.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah. And we meet Zira, and she's with Dr. Galen.
I thought it was Cornelius.
I think first she's
with Galen.
Talking
okay.
to Galen, yeah.
Right, right.
And they're discussing quota systems.
Right.
Which, yeah, there's some commentary there on race and
uh-huh.
at the time, right?
Right.
Yeah. And she's intrigued by Taylor, who's been shot in the neck, so he can't talk.
Right, when they were rounding up the humans. Yeah.
Of course, he shows some intelligence. So there's a line that Julius, the kind of gruff gorilla guard, uses. Human see, human do.
Right.
Now, my understanding is that this was not in Serling's script, nor in Wilson's script, that there was a third guy came in and wrote the lines like this. What do we think about this kind of line? And the other lines like it. I've never met an ape I didn't like, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you think?
It's a little bit of a clunker.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
think
yeah.
It's
kind of a dud.
Yeah, and I think there are some pretty talky scenes once we get to the compound there,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of Twilight Zone episodes. Some of them, you know, just like go by in 5 minutes.
Yeah,
it's just fantastic. And then some of those half-hour Twilight Zone episodes seem pretty long.
Yeah,
a little talky.
Yeah,
that could use a little editing. So I think there are some clunkers in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that, you know, they needed to just stretch that film out, the movie out, with some dialogue scenes because they didn't have the budget
mm-hmm.
for a lot of action scenes.
Sure.
And
yeah.
so I think that's going on.
I think it's trying to add some humor. You
yeah,
know what I mean? Some levity to an otherwise serious situation here. The tension is starting to build here in the movie, so they're really trying to add some humor. you know, with a dumb, corny joke.
It's in there. They don't need to push it too hard. And I think that's just a common thing where you just don't, you know, you lose your nerve a little bit. You don't trust the audience enough.
Right.
Exactly. Like, there's a lot of really smart, witty satire in there. This kind of line doesn't do that at all. Like
you said, it's kind of a corny, corny joke thrown in for a giggle.
It takes you out of it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
that was my feeling.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think these lines have aged that well. Okay, so then we meet Dr. Zaius for the first time.
Dr. Zaius.
And we already know he's an anti-human.
Right.
Yeah, they eat up their own food, they migrate into the ape fields, and the sooner he is exterminated, the better.
Right.
That kind of says it all, yeah.
Right.
Well, you
the
know,
sooner
you
he's exterminated, the better.
you can just take that to so many places.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
That's, you know, certainly how a lot of people felt about the Vietnamese when they reported casualties in the media in the United States. There are the American casualties, and then, of course, these were the Vietnamese casualties, and they didn't count as much.
Right.
You can extend that to African Americans.
Yeah.
You can extend it to Native Americans. You can extend it to just any group of others who have less power than whoever is in control. It's like one of the things you do is you dehumanize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make them less than. We've seen it happening now, obviously.
You frame them as parasites.
You can win the White House
right.
with that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
that's true.
It's always been there. It's not an American thing, obviously.
No, not at all.
It's just a human thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you look at the hierarchy in Ape City, too. The lighter-skinned orangutans are in charge.
True.
The darker-skinned gorillas are the grunts.
But what's interesting is, like, it's a human thing, yes, but these aren't humans. These are apes. So
yeah.
So I think one of the things that the movie is asking and that, you know, Taylor has to grapple with at the end is, like, is this just how intelligence is in the universe?
It's going to happen all over again,
whether you're a human being
or not, or
an ape. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, whatever life form is on top, is this just the end result of
civilization?
Of intelligence.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So, and what we should definitely get into comparing this to 2001, which came out almost the same exact time.
So, do you have any thoughts now, or you want to get into that later?
Well, I think they're both deeply cynical.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. You think?
But what Kubrick did with 2001 was, let's just assume that, you know, the human race or life is just going to always come to this endpoint. It would take some super intelligence / God.
The monolith.
Yeah.
You know, to actually bring us out of this cycle. Kubrick doesn't believe in it.
Right.
But he takes a leap of imagination. Like, what if I did believe in it? Let's believe in it to make this movie.
Right.
Because this is what it will take for us to evolve. And so it takes a leap of imagination that this movie doesn't take.
So it seems like Heston ended up in the wrong movie. If Taylor had ended up in 2001 A Space Odyssey,
it would be a completely different fucking film. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not coming back as no star child. No way. Not me.
Yeah,
What's that monolith thing?
Point.
Let's blow it up.
I mean, these were the two big sci-fi movies of 1968.
Yeah, and once again, groundbreaking special effects
in both films.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, they're the culmination.
Sure. Yeah.
Both very interesting, making very interesting statements on humanity.
Well, also, John Chambers won the first Academy Award for makeup effects for this film.
Okay,
he created
the
category.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, who did the effects for 2001, the kind of Neanderthal creatures or the proto-humans?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Well, I know Douglas Trumbull gets most of the... He gets most, even for the visual effects. Yeah, but it's kind of murky, you know, who did what on 2001, because Kubrick apparently took a lot of credit.
For everything, yeah.
He was also resentful when other people... So many people. But also, you can compare, like, the ape-like creatures at the beginning of the movie to these characters.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think you can say one is better than the other. It's just brilliant.
Well done effects.
Okay, so there's a fight in the little cage there, and Taylor's tried to write the words "I can write" or something, right? On the ground.
In the sand, right.
And Zaya sees it and
Nova scratches it out first.
Right.
And he kind of smacks her, and he gets into a fight with one of the other guys.
Yeah.
Which is
the
like
cage
some,
match.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
They're drop kicking each other and everything.
But then Zaya sees it. So he knows.
Yeah, he knows.
He knows what's going on with Taylor already. So we established that at this point. But then he does finally manage to write, "My name is Taylor," in Zira's little book.
Yeah.
Her notebook.
On her notepad,
right?
Yeah.
So then he gets called into their home, and he's just writing everything, the whole situation here.
He makes a paper airplane.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And
why fly?
Where would it get you?
Right. Here to there.
And Cornelius discovered evidence of an older culture that suggested that ape evolved from man,
right,
which is, of course, heresy.
Right.
That might have some correspondences to something in the real world, right?
Yeah.
Something that we're still grappling with,
right,
strangely enough.
Right. Yeah, it's a dig out in the Forbidden Zone, right, that Cornelius
has.
Yes. Yeah, it's out in the Forbidden
and
Zone.
Zira suggests that the sacred scrolls are not worth their parchment.
Ooh. Which,
no, you don't say that.
Right.
Not when you are dealing with a fundamentalist hierarchy. Not
who's
that
also,
that ever happens.
Who's also like the minister of science.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Yes,
completely
yes. Uh-huh.
Conflated
yeah.
science and religion because it's an authoritarian government for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And they've determined, the leaders of this culture, that this is how we're going to perpetuate our species. The only way to survive is to be an authoritarian government.
Right. And to lie.
So, Steve,
just lie about stuff.
Are you daring to suggest that as we look at these apes, we're actually seeing ourselves?
No, I think we're reading.
It's like a mirror.
We're reading into it too
it's
much.
It's like a mirror.
It's a pure action movie.
Exactly. It's for kids.
Well, they made toys.
True. So Zaius wants Taylor gelded. He doesn't want any more of these around, right?
Right.
Taylor escapes, and we get a little more of Ape City, right? We see an ape church.
Right. The museum.
We get the line, "I never met an ape I didn't like." Where was that from? "I never met a man I didn't like." That's
I think that's Will Rogers.
It's Will Rogers. Okay. In the museum, he finds Dodge stuffed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of unique, because all the humans are light-skinned.
You don't see any African-Americans.
No.
In this,
no.
Which is
no.
kind of odd.
I right. don't even,
no, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not odd for American cinema.
True.
No,
that's true.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Par for
to
the
have
course.
No black people
you're
in
right.
the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, they stuff them.
Yeah. And I love the fact that the first words that come out of Taylor's mouth,
"Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape."
Well, you've been waiting a long time to do that. It's a racial slur, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
You just substitute any ethnicity for ape, and it's hate speech.
That's the first thing
he
says.
That's the first thing he says, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Oh, okay. So Taylor's got a mute, silent partner in Nova.
Nova, right.
So he can just monologue.
Right.
And what does he talk about? Well,
oh, being back on Earth, sure, there was a lot of love making, but no love. But he gets the hottest chick on the planet, human chick on the planet, really, to run around with.
Yeah.
In this skimpy outfit.
Yeah.
Because she is freaking smoking hot.
She was a
film.
Model, right?
Yeah, she was like Miss
Linda Harrison?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much difference between what she's doing and wearing to what Raquel Welch does.
Right.
Exactly.
In 1 million BC.
And wasn't she considered for this role?
I don't know.
Okay.
She does you got to have the girl in there.
You have
to have the girl in there.
Yeah.
They had to have
a little cheesecake.
Yeah, they couldn't just have Dr.
Zira.
Zira.
Right.
Yeah,
Dr.
Yeah.
Zira. You know, they needed the human cheesecake.
And she was whose girlfriend? The producer's girl? Xanax's girlfriend?
Something
like that, right?
Yeah, yeah, I believe. Yeah, I think she was having an affair with him is what it was.
Okay.
She was also like Miss Minnesota or Miss Maryland
or something like that.
She was a contender for Miss America.
I mean, she doesn't do a bad job.
I don't know.
Like, she does some
well,
good
when she
eye
out. Well, when she scratches out Taylor's writing, I mean, she understands that if he reveals his intelligence,
right,
that it's just
they're gonna
be
kill
the,
you.
It's going to be
yeah.
the end of him.
Right.
Yeah.
For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah. And she even puts her hand on his mouth in the cage at one point.
Yeah,
like, to stop
yeah,
talking.
Yeah.
Probably just because he was annoying the fuck out of her at that point.
I mean, come on. If you're stuck in a cage with Charlton Heston.
Right. Nova. Nope. Shut
just,
the
just
fuck
shut,
up.
Shut your
right.
mouth.
Her first words are going to be, "Shut up."
I'm wondering where she gets her legs shaved. That's my thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get into the bits. We'll get into the bits.
Okay. So he left Earth because there was nobody to hold him there.
Right.
Again,
right.
misanthrope.
Yeah.
And what's this thing about Stuart? Well, what does he say? With our hot and What's the line again?
She was to be the new Eve.
Yes, yes.
With our hot and eager help.
Well, you know, that brings
They were
going
to populate the planet.
That brings up the whole question of what was the mission about.
Right, exactly.
You know, I never quite got that. They send this crew...
Supposedly to another planet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but into the future, too.
Right.
You know, so I don't understand, like, how are they going to relay the scientific findings back?
Yeah,
you know, they
no
do
way.
Try to signal Earth when they crash land into the lake.
Right.
True,
but
yeah.
I don't know, the science is just beyond me. I'm not sure what the
exactly
goal
what the goal was. Right, yeah.
He says Stuart was to be the new Eve. So they're going to colonize a new planet with one woman and three men?
That's fucked
like
up.
Like, the math is kind of wrong there. I mean, you think you'd
that's
go
all
for
kinds
it.
Of nasty gangbang. That's
yeah,
just, that's
I mean.
Real, that's fucked up.
That's,
how does she feel about it? It's lucky she died. I hate to say it, but if they landed on a planet that they could populate, forget about it. It would have been a living hell for her. A living fucking hell for her, man.
All I can say is if NASA used the same kind of math for that as they used for the engineering on the ship, no wonder it crashed. Because something just doesn't add up.
The
there,
reasoning
right?
is fucking off.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and it's also, it's not NASA on their suits. It's ANSA. Did you ever notice that?
No.
It's A-N-A-S.
It's basically NASA, just some made
up. Just backwards, yeah.
So otherwise, NASA might sue.
Right, exactly.
You know, because it makes them look pretty bad.
They just switched the N and the A.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah.
So.
Okay, so then there's the hearing.
Right, the trial.
The court,
Oh, you mean when the movie just kind of grinds to a halt?
We'll talk about that.
It kind of grinds to a halt.
Yeah.
It slows down. I think, again, they're padding. And like I said, the 20th Century Fox board is like, this budget cannot be over $6 million. And they ended up spending like 5.8. You know,
okay.
So they really had to cut costs. So
right.
I think a lot of these talkie scenes are simply a way of like padding out the movie.
Mm.
They have a few key action scenes, but not a lot.
Not a whole lot, no.
There's the, you know, when Taylor escapes and he's running through the Gaudi architecture, somehow battling 50 apes and coming out on top. I mean, it's very much like a fight in a Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
He knocks over the food table, which only happens.
And the weird sculptures in the museum.
So, there's just not a lot of there's less action than you think. And so
that's true. Yeah,
I think they spent the money on the makeup, on the location shooting.
Yeah.
And they just had to have a lot of dialogue.
Yeah.
This whole scene, it feels like Michael Wilson had a big hand in this. It is like a Kafka-esque show trial.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like he had some experience with that.
That's right.
Yeah, with the witch hunts again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Coming after him in the 50s.
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like, he's supposed to cite ape law or the sacred scrolls, which he's never actually seen.
Right.
That's how he's supposed to prove that he's intelligent. It's just, it's all set up, basically. Yeah.
I think they could have trimmed a little bit there.
Exactly.
But.
Well, there's also the other corny joke with the hear no evil, see
evil,
speak no evil.
Now, I hear that was improvised on the spot.
That's right. I heard that too.
They actually do, like, one
Yeah, they do the...
Hands over the eyes.
They do that,
Ears.
Yeah.
When he's talking at one point, I believe.
And I think one
when
of
Taylor's
them
talking.
Is actually passing, like, a card underneath the table.
I heard they improvised it on the spot, and they didn't plan to use it, but it actually worked well with the test audience.
Test audience, that's what I read,
because,
that's
you know, test audiences,
they like the corny jokes.
They do,
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember liking that as a kid, but now it's just,
it feels really ham-fisted.
It's definitely, it's anti-science, it's anti-evidence.
Exactly.
Absolutely,
It's stacked against him. It's like a fundamentalist culture.
It makes the point.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we find Landon lobotomized.
Yeah.
And that's harsh.
You
cut
him. You cut out his brain.
You bloody baboon.
Why didn't they just kill him? Why? I mean, I know why they lobotomized him, so we'd have the scene.
The scene, that's basically what it's for.
Could it's letting us know that this is another fate that's in store for Taylor.
Did they experiment on his brain? Is that what it was? Like, trying to find out what it was?
Well, they did say that at one scene. In one scene, Zira says that in one scene.
I think Dr. Zaius is just short-circuiting him. That's why they want to geld
Taylor now, right.
It's like, we just can't have any more of these. We've got to stop.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so Zaius is threatening Taylor, saying, I'm going to experiment on your brain unless Taylor tells him where his tribe is.
Right, when he calls him to his quarters.
Yeah.
After the trial, right.
So, again, there's this idea, there's this hidden enemy out there trying to get us, right? Which happens occasionally, you know what I mean? Yeah. Deep state. And then Zira and Cornelius get Taylor out. I love this line. Zira tells him that all men look alike to most apes.
There's another one. Which, another line.
That one doesn't bother me.
I kind of like that one,
because people actually say that.
People believe that shit.
I grew up around that. I heard it. Yeah. You know, they all look alike. I mean, it is a line. And it's real, for sure.
Yeah, that's the one that I think... It is designed to make people think, oh, you think this is messed up? Well, think about what you think about black people or Asian people or, you know, anybody.
You hope it went that deep. Some people might have glossed it over as a joke.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that was the intention, you know, to try to get people to think a little bit, and I think this kind of stuff works better as satire, as the reflection upon ourselves.
Right.
So they go out in the Forbidden Zone. Cornelius says that it was pronounced as off-limits by the lawgiver, but nobody knows why, right?
Right.
Okay, so they're in the archaeological site. Taylor finally shaves.
I got a bit about that. I'm going to jump ahead. Where the fuck did he get the shaving cream from? You live in an ape society. They're not shaving. Where the hell did he get the shaving cream from?
Well, same way Nova got cream to shave her legs. I don't know.
Where'd it come from?
No, good point.
Did he just make it right there on the spot?
How do you make shaving cream?
I don't know. Charlton Heston knows, obviously. Comes out of nowhere.
Good point. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we'll get back to bits later. Yeah.
I love that line from Cornelius. Makes you look less intelligent.
Right. Why'd you scrape all your hair off your face? Julia says.
Which is, in the 60s, it was the opposite, right? Like, if you were...
Well, he says that at one point, right.
If you were unshaven, you were like a serious guy. If you had a beard, you were
a hippie.
A hairy hippie dumbass, right?
I mean, right. That's...
Or, also the beard could be the college professor.
That's true.
Well, if you're older, then it looked like wisdom. Right. But when you were a kid, it was, you're rebelling against society.
Yeah.
Not shaving every day.
So we see the archaeological dig, and Cornelius reveals that the most ancient culture is the most advanced, culture equal to their own.
Right.
And I love the moment when Taylor examines the glasses, the false teeth, the heart valve. He said that this man was a weak, fragile animal, but he was here before you, and he was better than you.
But he was weak and fragile.
So suddenly, Taylor, the misanthrope, is the defender of humanity.
This is the end of his arc.
He was looking for, well, not quite.
Okay. It feels like it, right?
Previously, he was looking for something better than man, and now he's saying, no, man is better than you, better than the thing that he's found on this planet, which is an interesting place for him to go.
Yeah, now he's the defender of mankind.
Yeah.
It's like being critical of, if you're an American, being critical of your own country.
Right.
And then when you hear somebody from another country criticizing...
You're like, hey, wait a minute, buddy.
Yeah. You don't like it, leave. You know, we don't get that way, right?
Right.
And I think part of that is happening. But yeah, deep down, he's on a quest to find something better, but he really wants to believe that there's goodness, probably in goodness in himself, because he's such an asshole.
That's what he was really searching for,
I mean, he's very representative of a certain type of American, or an archetype of like the Hollywood. I mean, I think there is a parody going on here of the heroic Hollywood action hero. John Wayne character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the Charlton Heston character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although, you really think about it, he was often playing characters who was like a lot of self-parody going on with Charlton Heston.
Name some that you can think of.
Mega Man.
It was later.
Soylent Green.
Later. Yeah, because those were afterwards.
Just deeply, just jerks, just people who are misanthropes, who have a lot of flaws, who are just over-the-top Americans, you know, and Major Dundee, Western he did for Sam Peckinpah, deeply flawed.
Oh, right, okay,
leader, you know, really strong and courageous, but almost subhuman.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And it's the whole idea of the, you know, the United States spreading democracy over the globe, but, you know, destroying villages while it's doing so.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what imperialism is all about. We're going to liberate you, but we're just going to have to kill you to do
it. Right, exactly. We're going to have to wipe you out.
We destroy the village in order to save it.
Yeah.
And
I think that's what makes the movie work. It is him in the role because of what you're saying, because of exactly what you're saying. I think that it's a key to making this movie work.
I mean, having him in that role.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Moses doesn't. That's a saint, you know. So that, certainly Ben-Hur is more Ben-Hur. Of a saint. But Ben-Hur, I think moving into the '60s, he's deliberately playing jerks.
So, what are some of the other roles you can think of that he was doing back then? I'm reaching now.
The ones I'm thinking of really are Major Dundee, this one, Omega Man, Soylent Green.
Soylent Green.
Yeah. Yeah,
he's just
definitely.
In movie after movie, he's playing a big jerk.
Right.
Yeah. Who gets his comeuppance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or who sees the light at the end, you know.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's in our podcast trilogy here, we've completed.
It's true, yeah.
Our Charlton Heston.
The Cheston trilogy.
The Cheston trilogy. At the end, he does see the light with those three, with Omega Man, Soylent Green, and Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, and Omega Man, he dies a Christ figure, essentially.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Soylent Green.
But then he realizes at the end that
Soylent Green, he brings the revelation.
Right.
He's the prophet at the end
right.
that nobody believes. Lucius, is there his nephew, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't trust the older generation.
Right, it was Lucius. I thought it was Julius, right?
Which was a thing, right?
Right.
Back then, of course. 60s
Never
again.
Trusts anybody over 30. That's the spirit.
Zaius says, if man was superior, why didn't he survive? Taylor suggests, it must have been a plague or a storm of meteors.
Right.
This guy who's talking about men going into war against each other
right.
doesn't consider that possibility.
It wasn't possible. Right.
Sure, yeah. And then we get the great lines from the Sacred Scroll. Beware the beast man, right?
Right.
And they echo Taylor's monologue at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
Because it talks about man making war on his brother, et cetera, right?
Yep.
It's the same kind of imagery, at least. Thematically, it's very, very similar. So Zaius lets Taylor go, seals up
why?
The cave.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Well, because we need the ending.
Yeah, exactly.
True,
right.
True.
Per the movie, per the plot.
And he says, don't look for it, Taylor. You may not like what you see.
Yeah, he knows what's out there.
Yeah.
So is out there.
Well, you know, Zaius, he's like, it's like, I never read the book, but I saw the movie of The Name of the Rose.
Okay.
And it's deliberate suppression of knowledge.
Yeah.
Right.
And
that's what he's
that's
about.
What Dr. Zaius is doing. That's what the whole culture is doing. And, you know, Cornelius and Zira.
Right.
I mean, they're scientists and they always have to be cautious about probing too deeply, about losing their funding, about getting too close to the truth.
Yeah.
And they have to make compromises every step of the way to keep their careers, to stay alive without provoking the government too much.
Right.
Yeah.
And Zaius the question is, is he aware that Taylor is from the future? And
that's
not
a good question.
Probably not.
But
right.
It doesn't matter. He knows that he is a human being, and somehow he knows that Taylor is from this planet.
Yes.
We're on. I won't give it away.
Yes.
Too late.
He's connected somehow to these other
ruins. Dr. Zaius, he really believes that the suppression of history and of culture is for the good.
It's fundamental for this society.
Society we just have to keep a lid on it, or we're going to end up in the same place.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Better to be alive and a little bit stupid than to find truth and destroy ourselves.
Absolutely.
Good point.
Has he decided that Taylor, once he gets out there and learns the truth, whatever, he'll basically implode?
Or he'll just disappear.
Yeah.
He'll just disappear never come back.
He knows he can't actually stop him,
right.
in a sense. Just let him go.
He'll find out the truth, and then he'll just disappear. He'll fade away.
And I think by then, Zaius knows that Taylor is one of a kind.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
maybe he's also hoping that the Forbidden Zone will just consume him and he'll just die out there.
Probably, yeah.
You know? I didn't mean to cut you off, Steve.
Okay, so then we get one of the most iconic endings ever in cinema.
In film history.
Yes. So this is when Taylor finds out that mankind has blown itself up.
I'm back!
And again, big irony sign above this, because of course he's come full circle.
Yeah.
He was right. He was right to distrust humanity. And he finds out that Zaius was right.
Yeah.
That you can't trust man. He will destroy
himself.
Yes.
And everything around him.
So it turns out this suppressor of truth fundamentalist is the one who knows what's going on. And our hero, who is idealistic and sure of himself, he's
idealistic,
lost.
Idealistic, mean, egotistical.
It's a cynical ending.
Yeah.
But it spoke a lot of truth, especially back then when, you know, we were on the brink of nuclear war. Right.
You maniacs!
Yeah.
You blew it up!
What do you think, Steve?
I think Zaius says to Taylor, and Taylor's reaction when he sees the
Statue of Liberty,
you know,
buried up
ruined
to the chest
in the sands,
about, yeah,
I
right.
think
yeah.
his reaction to that just goes to show that Taylor really, he was a seeker. He was searching for, like he said, something better than
right.
man. But really, he's just searching for something good in man, like so,
mm-hmm.
and good in himself, like we discussed.
Just, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah.
And to search that there's some innocence there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a belief system.
Right.
And if he is going to collapse in the sand the way he does,
right.
when he sees the truth, that just goes to show that he's not the cynic that he
exactly.
really thought himself to
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
But you got to admire his honesty to himself. He knows he's an asshole. He kind of knows it all the way through until he finds out about himself
right.
at the end. He knows who he is.
Wait, when he
kind of says it.
When he says you blew it up, he's really saying
I blew it up.
Yeah.
We all did.
He's at the top of the culture. He's white. He's educated. He's an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
He's a scientist.
Right.
He's
mm-hmm.
a pilot. He's Charlton Heston. He's a movie
yeah.
star. You
yeah.
know, you're supposed to also accept him as not just Taylor, but as Charlton Heston. He is at the top
right.
with all the power. So
exactly.
who blew it up? He blew it up. His people blew it up.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And he knows it.
But I wonder sometimes if he is actually placing blame in that scene then.
What do you mean?
You know what I mean? He seems like the type of character that wouldn't take the blame for something like that. Even at the end of his arc now. I pose that
so
question.
You don't see a self-recognition there. I mean, he is accusing you maniacs.
Right. Because he says it in the beginning.
Yeah. So you,
so now he's saying
so
at the end
So you feel like
again.
He's separating himself from that.
I'm wondering. I'm
it's,
thinking maybe.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
I could go either way with it, it's, but I'm wondering.
Okay.
Since we're discussing it.
It's, well, yeah. That's what we're here for.
It's right. a collapse. It's what have I done.
Okay.
That's what's
it?
Happening.
It, yeah.
What have I done?
So now you're saying he feels responsible because he's the last man on Earth once again?
No, I
so
don't
to
think
speak?
It's that literal. He is part of the human race from the 20th century, whenever that...
The
whenever,
machine when, that
whenever
did this.
There
right.
was this nuclear
right.
holocaust,
yeah.
he was part of the military-industrial complex. He was part of the culture.
He was a cog.
And he thought he could escape it,
yeah.
but he doesn't.
But
see, that's
what
I'm asking. So now
yeah.
he's looking back going, you fucked it up. I was out of here. I was gone.
Yeah, but I
I'm
don't,
playing devil's advocate.
No, I know. I guess the question is how much self-recognition does he have? I think we agree that he is part of the thing that destroyed itself, but does he recognize himself as part of it?
Well, there's so much
right.
bold talk at the beginning of
yeah.
the spaceship.
Yeah.
And he's like so excited to have escaped it all. Everyone is dead. Everyone you knew is dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know,
he likes that idea.
He loves
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
then
yeah.
when he sees, like, if he really believes that, then why should he care?
Right.
Yeah.
The
Statue no, you're right.
of Liberty
you're right.
is in the sand.
Yeah, yeah.
Why
right.
should he care? Like, he wanted them.
Yeah, this American symbol.
He wanted to get away from
and
it.
He
you know,
laughed
like,
at the flag.
I'm
and
going
now,
into the future. I'm leaving
yeah.
all of you people behind,
right.
and I'm just going to be here with
okay.
Stuart and the female
mm-hmm.
astronaut, and
right.
I'm and Dodge and the other guy. They're going to be my henchmen.
Yeah.
right,
this
right.
is all I want. And
they're
going to
do my laundry.
My little kingdom here.
Cut up my fruit.
But in the end, he's ruined and heartbroken when he sees what's. What has come of his whole culture and his whole world?
Okay,
like
yeah,
said, yeah,
I
could go either way.
Yeah,
with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
This ape civilization, and they're no better. You know, they're
right.
you know.
No.
It, to
right.
me, it's like what would be a great double feature is Planet of the Apes and Woody Allen's Sleeper.
oh, interesting.
Because
okay.
at the close of the movie,
yeah.
What does Woody Allen say to Diane Keaton? In 6 months, we'll be stealing Erno's nose. and
yeah,
that's,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Apes, you know, human beings,
yeah.
it doesn't matter.
Right, right.
You know,
it's
it
going to be
it's,
cyclical.
It, it's,
yeah.
Yes, it's all taking us to the same point, which leads us again to 2001. It's like, it would take a monolith, some superior intelligence to...
Some
to,
celestial being to come down and
to
say...
Break
yeah,
to
break
yeah.
a cycle.
Yes,
to break
yeah.
the cycle.
To break
yeah.
the cycle. And I think that's like the ultimate cynical statement. I don't think Kubrick led on to Arthur C. Clarke. That, you know,
he was gonna
a,
do this.
This is
yeah.
actually a cynical statement to like, it would take this
right.
to actually evolve.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, Taylor's cocksure again before he trots off into the Forbidden Zone with Nova. He starts talking shit to Zaius.
Yeah.
Right before he disappears into the Forbidden Zone to find the Statue of Liberty, find his destiny.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that funny that, you know, he's kind of back in the saddle again, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes out into the desert and then he's a broken man. So
he's
that's why I'm wondering if
man
he,
on a horse with a gun and a girl on his back. You know, it's like the classic Western.
I would
thing,
be
yeah.
fine with that shit.
But you know,
I'd live in a Forbidden Zone, no problem.
All this stuff you can just put aside, you
right.
know, because What they really needed was high school kids and college kids
mm-hmm.
and adults to get into the movie theater
to sell
tickets.
To see it,
because
yeah.
you
yeah,
can put
sure.
all of that stuff aside, and the movie works on the level of an action film with a twist ending.
Absolutely,
And that's why, because none of these theories or the social comment would matter if the movie just didn't work as just a fun, unique, well-done yarn.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, right. I've enjoyed it since I was a kid. And I certainly wasn't thinking about these things back then. It was just a really fun movie with a great twist ending.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It's that thing we've talked about before. If you have a good movie that just works as an action movie or whatever, you're feeding people dessert, but you're giving them vitamins. You're just slipping them in there, you know, with
just
a commentary.
Right,
now, I just watched the movie again, and really my favorite parts, and I think it's always been the case, is the opening sequence of the movie up to the point where the astronaut plants the flag.
Okay.
And Taylor mocks him.
Mm-hmm.
And the closing scene. Like, to me, what really makes the movie work, forget the apes,
uh-huh.
forget the action sequences, forget the makeup, forget all of it. You can take the opening
sequence. I see what you're
saying.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
To the point where Taylor, the other astronaut, what's his name?
Landon
plants the flag. You can cut from there
to the end.
To the point when Dr. Zaius has the cave diggings blown up, and then they have this beautiful cut from the explosion to a shot of the shoreline. And the water on the shoreline moving. And you hear, it's an audio cut, you can hear the explosion over the moving ocean, water on the beach.
Okay.
And then the Jerry Goldsmith music comes back.
Okay.
And it gets quiet again, and there's no dialogue. And you have a long shot of Taylor and Nova on horseback. And then they have a cut, almost the final shot, and they're on the right side of the screen. The music cuts out. All you hear is the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the crown on the left side. And you can watch that shot over and over again. And it's mm-hmm. always a shock when the sharp edges of the crown come in on the left side of the screen. It's almost like an experimental film.
Mm.
Because it's just these sharp angles cutting
across.
It's almost
like an art film, right?
Yeah, cutting across the screen. It's a great,
it's piercing.
Great shot.
Literally.
And,
you know.
And it's... You can cut out the dialogue, Heston's dialogue. You don't need it.
No.
You don't even need the dialogue on when he's walking in the ship, smoking the cigar and talking.
That's another thing. Get into that.
That would be like, I mean, you guys talked about the Chris Marker movie, La Jetée. Which movie?
That was with Terminator. Yeah.
Terminator.
Right.
And
right.
I really feel like Terminator and La Jetée and then Planet of the Apes, if you cut out everything with the apes and just have the opening and the closing with no dialogue,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's the heart of the movie.
Yeah.
That is
absolutely.
Movie. And it,
that's his journey.
But that, to me, is the great filmmaking. And I think we should talk about...
Well, you just turned it into an hour-long episode of Twilight Zone, basically.
Well,
you know?
Then it's 20,
you know?
Yeah, 20 minutes. But we should talk about some of the people who made the movie.
Yeah.
And the cinematographer, Leon Shamroy.
Right.
Yeah.
He shot... It's not a great movie, but it's one of the most beautifully shot movies. It's pretty cheesy, from the 40s, called Leave Her to Heaven with Gene Tierney. It's one of the great Technicolor movies of the 40s.
Technicolor, wow.
He also shot Cleopatra, not a good movie.
Yeah.
It's just fun to look at. It looks
really good.
Visually.
We should also talk about the editor, Hugh Fowler. He edited Patton. He worked with Franklin Schaffner on Patton.
Patton.
And
was he also on Papillon?
He was also on Papillon, I believe. Hmm. And these are all 20th Century Fox people.
Yeah, right.
So you
just
have some really fine crafts people working on this film.
Right.
And I think they really, really shine in the opening and in the closing. And then you've got some turgid dialogue scenes in the middle.
I mean, when you look at it, this could have been like a really silly kids movie, right?
Yeah.
But like you said, they got amazing technical people, great writers, good actors. So they they sold it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And good ideas, interesting ideas,
And certainly with that end, 2001 led the way to Star Wars.
We're back to Star Wars.
But we shouldn't forget Fantastic Voyage, too.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, that's
which
classic.
Which predated this by a couple of years, which I think showed Hollywood that you can make money off of science fiction films.
Mm-hmm. Right, with some special effects, with some good effects.
That genre was dead, you know, in the 60s. It was big in the 50s, but they brought it back with
The Atomic Age in
Fantastic
the 50s.
Fantastic Voyage and
mm-hmm.
this one.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the bits, right?
Yep, time for bits!
Yes. So, has anybody read the original novel by Pierre Boulle?
I have not. Sadly, I hate to admit.
Well, when I was a kid, I read it. It's interesting. For one thing, he actually does go to another planet. It's basically like our civilization in the 60s, except with apes. They're in airplanes, helicopters, they're driving cars.
Right, it's not as primitive.
Exactly.
I do know that.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah. And originally, they were going to do that in this movie. It was just cost prohibitive.
Cost too much,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, to do a whole city with apes and
helicopters.
But in the original script by Serling, that was how it was.
Right.
And in that one, it's pretty similar. He's caught, he learns the ape language, and he's a celebrity for a while.
Really?
Because he's a curiosity,
right.
Which is kind of like the plot of Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Right, exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
in reverse. Yeah. But then they're suspicious of him, et cetera, et cetera. He escapes, he and Nova get back on the spaceship. They make it back to Earth, but because of the time dilation effect, by that point, Earth has been taken over by apes, which is the ending that Tim Burton used in his remake, except it didn't make any sense.
In his bad remake.
Version. Yeah.
The makeup was great in Tim Burton's version.
Sure, yeah. That was good.
Any story that has circular time, you know, where it doubles back on itself, I get lost.
What about Back to the Future?
I need a straight... Except Back to the Future.
Some of them are tight.
There is an exception.
Well, the Terminator is tight.
Yeah, but
still,
it just like takes the fun out of it. It's like whatever happened, whatever just happened, didn't matter because it was predetermined and it's just looping back on itself. So, yeah.
That's the big twist, you know?
Yeah.
That's the big twist.
All right, Walt, you got some bits?
A couple.
It's here.
Well, first, I got a couple of questions. Like you said, shaving cream.
Uh-oh.
Where the fuck did he get it?
Okay.
They're on a spaceship, 4-man crew, right?
Yes.
3 men, 1 woman.
Yes.
When they have to escape and bail out, they couldn't pack a bigger raft? Those 3 guys are on a tiny flotation device,
true.
Basically.
You would think.
A bigger raft, you know? There was a little more room on that ship to pack a bigger raft.
Yeah.
And the rations, too.
Yeah.
There's like hardly any rations.
Do they not have time to grab all the rations or something?
I don't know. They grabbed their cases.
Okay, yeah.
And speaking of which, remember in the 90s those hard shell backpacks became a thing?
Yeah.
That we see in this movie, the astronauts' backpacks?
Yeah.
In the 90s they were all over the place.
Yeah.
That reminded me when I rewatched the movie about those 90s backpacks.
Okay.
So, Sammy Davis Jr., here's a bit, got one of the 2 lawmakers.
Really?
The statues, yeah. He wanted one and he got it.
Wait, so he has the statue like in his backyard or something?
Yeah, pretty much.
Back then? When
he wanted one, he got one. Because he was Sammy Davis Jr. He can get whatever the hell he wanted.
If I could have had one, I would so have one right
now. Fuck yeah. You kidding? Oh, and you talked about the weird sculptures in the museum.
Yeah.
That claw that he passes by.
Yeah. Ape modern art. Yeah.
Right. It's actually a plaster cast of the foot of the monster that attacks a spaceship in Forbidden Planet.
Now, that is trivia. That is deep trivia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, there's no female gorillas or orangutans.
Yeah,
only
you're
chimpanzees.
Right. Okay.
So I guess they're the only ones that maybe can mate or procreate.
Well,
you
got to imagine it's probably a sexist society, so you're not going to have female orangutans in power or female gorillas as the police or military.
Right. But we don't see outside of Ape City besides the crops, the fields.
True, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There was supposed to be a scene, there was a deleted scene, they were going to hide out at Zira's father's farm.
Okay.
Outside of Ape City.
Okay.
Would have been interesting to see more world building.
Yeah, there's not. There aren't a lot of sets. I think it really, once they're in the ape encampment, it feels a lot like a television episode. I think that's
with the way the sets looked back then
and the way they shot it. I think they were really worried about money when they made that.
And they reused those sets in Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
Uh huh. Yeah.
The amphitheater.
Yeah.
You know, the only good human is a dead human.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think that's pretty much what I got, you know. Oh, Charlton Heston, he was sick during the filming. He had the flu for a majority of it.
Oh, wow.
And they continued filming because his voice was raspier than normal. So that's why you get those lines like, it's just taking balls. You get that out of him. And
it suits a man whose throat is healing, I guess.
Right.
You
know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he said that he felt like he was going to die. Whenever they hit him with the hose, he felt like he was going to die because he was so sick.
Oh, man.
Reminds me of there's some shocking images when they first come to the humans that people are captured earlier in the film. You've got some humans hanging upside down
by
their ankles.
Yeah.
And it's pretty horrible.
But meanwhile, the movie's rated G.
Yeah,
Very briefly.
Yeah, yeah. Slip that
past the censors. Uh-huh. And
are they going to eat them?
Well,
what are they going to do with that?
They were probably thinking a little bit about slave ships.
Okay, right.
You're right.
Probably
thinking
of the Holocaust.
Well, you get those two images back to back with the ape with the little kid on his shoulder, like Vietnam War.
Well, there's that.
Right? Yeah. And then he walks past the humans hanging upside down,
they slide it in there. I don't remember even seeing that. When I just saw it recently, I was pretty surprised. Hmm. I don't even know if, like, when it was shown on network television,
if that was
in the 70s, I'll bet you they cut that.
They probably
shot
cut
out.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Hmm. Okay.
It's insane. Well, you know, I like to do the taglines, too.
Yes.
The movie poster taglines. Okay. Somewhere in the universe, there must be something better than man,
mm-hmm.
like Taylor says.
Okay.
In a matter of time, an astronaut will wing through the centuries and find the answer.
What?
He may find the most terrifying of all on the planet where the apes are the rulers and man the beast.
It's a bit wordy.
And it's a long fucking... That's a paragraph.
Yeah.
That's a paragraph tagline. Well, then there was Go Ape. Straight ahead with the ape soldier pointing.
Yeah.
Kind of like, we want you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then my favorite, man hunted, caged, forced to mate by civilized apes.
Whoa. That sounds like a different kind of movie.
Exactly. That makes it exploitation.
I know what they're selling there, obviously. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. So I want to do a lightning round.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to throw questions.
Oh, fuck.
And don't think too hard.
I'll hurt myself.
Okay. Well, you first.
Well, what?
Best parody, Simpsons or Spaceballs?
Spaceballs.
Okay. Steve?
I think Planet of the Apes is the best parody.
It stands on its own. Yeah. It doesn't need to be parodied.
Or Beneath the Planet of the Apes is the best parody.
Okay. Well, that's the next question to you, Steve. The second best movie in the original series.
Well, I think I only saw Beneath, and that was all I needed to see. And I saw part of Escape, and it was pretty clear to me that, you know, this is just going to get worse as it goes along.
Yeah.
It's franchised now.
I kind of lost interest.
They didn't think they were going to get past two movies.
That's
they really
why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's why they blew up the planet at the end.
Yeah.
What separates, I mean, this is the first one, but they really made it about this character's
mm-hmm.
journey.
Yeah.
And that's just a strong narrative spine
mm-hmm.
to build a movie on. And the rest is, you know, cashing in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they already did with all the merchandising. I mean, toys, comic books, coloring books, everything under the sun.
There was a TV show.
An animated TV show.
Yeah.
The cartoon, right?
So, Walt, for you, second best.
I'm going to go Beneath, just because of the ending, like you said.
Okay.
I kind of like the cynical ending once again. You know, he hits the button himself this time.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Okay, best Charlton Heston chest. Omega Man, Soylent Green, or Planet of the Apes? Walt.
All three. My God. It's just a sexy chest, baby.
It's a sexy chest.
I can't pick.
Probably Ben Hur, the chariot scene.
Yeah.
He went outside with his choices.
Yeah. All right, Steve, Zira or Nova?
Nova.
Well,
why not both?
Okay.
You can have a threesome with
him. I'm going to say.
Why not?
I'm going to say for a nice dinner with conversation and wine, Zira. Anything more intimate, I'll stick my own species.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ooh.
So I think we've got this wrapped up, right?
Excellent.
We like this movie, obviously. That's why we're doing it. We think it's the oldest movie we've done so far.
That's true. Yeah. 68.
But it remains a classic.
68,
yeah.
I can watch this movie whenever.
Oh, easily. Absolutely.
I have to admit, it's one of those movies. If it's on, I'll watch it. I have the DVD, the Blu-ray. I bought it on video cassette, for crying out loud. I've bought it at least 3-4 times now.
Yeah.
And I still love it.
When I was a kid, they would show it every summer, like on ABC.
When they used to do the marathons or whatever?
During the summer, there'd be a sci-fi week. So around 3 p.m., they'd show like a sci-fi movie every single day, 5 days in a row. And they would all show Planet of the Apes. So I kind of grew up with it. Like, I saw it every year from like the age of 8 to like 16 or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of grew with it.
It's just one of those, you know, sort of lucky accidents in Hollywood
where
things just came together. It was the right movie at the right time.
Yeah.
They pulled together some really talented people who had been working together. They all worked at the same movie studio, although the director was a freelancer. It all came together. The writing was good. It was, you know, flabby in parts, you know, but
ultimately it's still a good picture.
It starts strong and ends strong. Mm-hmm. And that's what all you can hope for.
Like Max said, it's like
movie.
Tricking your kids into eating their vegetables. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you learn some things.
You do, yeah. You know, you get your meats and you get your veg.
It's got the killer ending.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Without the ending, although the makeup is great, but it's got the ending, and it's not just the concept, it's the way it was shot.
Exactly.
The creative decisions they made, cutting the music out, ending with just the sound of the ocean.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Yeah. Yeah. Silent, you know, silent credit roll.
The movie really starts them crashing in water, and it ends with water.
With water, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think M. Night Shyamalan learned something from that? The big twist ending?
Or maybe not, because he does it so badly in most of his movies.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
We're going to have an M. Night Shyamalan hate podcast now. Hating on M. Night?
I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. All right, so, Walt, we should decide the next movie, right?
Yes.
You have a coin someplace? Okay, so I guess I should be tossing this time, right?
You should be tossing.
Yes. Okay, here we go. Walt, call it.
Tails.
It is... What is that?
I don't know.
It is Tails. It is
Holy
Tails.
Shit,
yes,
I got
you win again.
Oh,
it's like fifth time in a row.
I wasn't expecting to win.
You Bob, never expect
I never expect to win.
It
I
is
really
a 50-50
don't.
Chance that I keep pointing out to you.
Oh, boy. I really didn't pick anything. I really didn't think of anything, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I didn't. You know what? So, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to hand it off this time.
Ooh, I got a freebie. Okay.
Yeah, you got a freebie.
Okay, so we have finished the Cheston trilogy. I would like to finish the Paul Verhoeven trilogy.
Okay.
Because we've done Starship Troopers and RoboCop.
Are we talking about
it's
Total
Recall.
Recall?
It's Total Recall, yes.
Recall, yeah. Recall! There we go.
Okay, all right.
Good choice.
Well, thank you, Steve, for showing up.
Yeah,
this
absolutely,
was a lot
man.
Of fun.
Yeah, it was
you
lot,
brought
a
in
lot of fun, yeah.
A lot of great stuff.
Yeah, you made us look smart for a minute.
Yeah. And thank you to Shelley for minding your... child during and letting you come over. That was great. And I'm sure she'll be listening to this at some point, right?
She will. I probably won't.
Right.
Once was enough.
Yeah, when I'm done with it, I'm done with it. Trust me.
Okay, so we are Useless Info, Inc. You can find us on the Facebooks, the Twitters, on WordPress, on Podomatic, on YouTube. And I think that covers... Oh, yeah,
pretty much
Google Play
Google
and
Play.
iTunes as well.
iTunes.
Okay, I am
Tons
Max.
Tons of places to find us.
And I am Max, and you are...
Who am I?
I don't know.
I'm Walt! Future sucks!
Future sucks. Bye.
It's a man!